Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The New Lombard Street by Perry Merling is a compact work of monetary and financial history that explains how the United States Federal Reserve evolved from a traditional central bank into an institution that must sometimes support market liquidity directly. Using Walter Bagehot's 19th century principles as a starting point, Merling argues that modern finance is organized around dealer-based securities markets and short-term funding, not only deposit-taking banks. In that environment, crises often appear as runs in wholesale money markets, where the problem is not just solvency but the disappearance of market making and the sudden inability to trade at reasonable prices. The book's purpose is to provide a framework for understanding what the Fed actually does in stress events, especially around the 2008 financial crisis, and why those actions do not fit neatly into standard textbook accounts. Merling advances the money view, an approach that emphasizes financial plumbing, payments, collateral, and the structure of money markets as central to central banking. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, from lender of last resort to dealer of last resort. Merling's signature contribution is the idea that the central bank role has expanded beyond lending to banks toward stabilizing key markets when private dealers stop making markets, supporting the banking system and payments. Merling argues that the modern system is more market-based, with securities dealers and wholesale funding channels playing a central role in transforming maturity and liquidity. When this system comes under strain, the problem can be an evaporating bid, not merely an illiquid bank. In that situation, lending to banks alone may not repair price formation or restore the ability to finance positions. The Fed then faces pressure to support market liquidity more directly, for example by accepting broader collateral, standing behind repo funding, or purchasing assets that anchor crucial markets. Merling frames this as the Fed acting as dealer of last resort, effectively replacing broken private market making to keep the system functioning. The point is not that the Fed should permanently allocate credit, but that it may need to temporarily ensure tradability and funding liquidity so that the broader credit system does not seize up. Secondly, the money view and why financial plumbing matters. A central theme is Merling's advocacy of the money view, a perspective that treats money markets, balance sheets, and settlement constraints as the core of monetary economics. Rather than beginning with abstract models of representative agents, the money view starts with the mechanics of payments, collateral, and short-term funding and asks how commitments are honored when confidence breaks. In this approach, liquidity is not a vague psychological concept, but an institutional outcome shaped by market structure, dealer inventories, and the ability to finance assets in repo or related markets. Merling emphasizes that what looks like a credit problem often manifests first as a funding problem. Institutions cannot roll over short-term liabilities, haircuts rise, and collateral that was previously financeable no longer is. Understanding these channels helps explain why central bank interventions often target specific markets and instruments, and why the distinction between monetary policy and financial stability policy blurs in a crisis. The money view also highlights hierarchy in the monetary system, where central bank liabilities sit at the top and private liabilities trade at par only when supported by credible backstops. For readers, the payoff is a clearer map of how stress propagates through modern market-based finance. Thirdly, how Fed operating practices evolved open markets, repo, and balance sheet tools. Merling places crisis policy in the context of the Fed's longer evolution in day-to-day operations. Over time, the Fed shifted from relying primarily on the discount window toward open market operations as its main instrument of monetary control, using the market for government securities to manage reserves and influence short-term interest rates. In the modern era, repo markets became central to how liquidity is distributed and priced, connecting banks, dealers, and money funds through collateralized borrowing and lending. This operating framework matters because it shapes what the Fed can do quickly in a crisis and which markets are most sensitive to intervention. Merling explains why a central bank that implements policy through markets can, under stress, end up stabilizing those same markets to preserve its ability to transmit policy and maintain payment stability. The broader lesson is that central banking is not only about choosing an interest rate target, but also about maintaining the institutional machinery that makes that target meaningful. When collateral chains break or repo funding becomes unreliable, the central bank may need to use its balance sheet more flexibly, not as a first choice, but as a way to restore basic market functioning so that private intermediation can resume. Fourthly, interpreting the 2008 crisis as a run on wholesale funding and market liquidity. The book treats the global financial crisis as a modern liquidity panic that traveled through wholesale funding markets and dealer balance sheets. In this interpretation, stress concentrated in short-term financing arrangements, such as repo and other money market instruments, where confidence in collateral values and counterparties can vanish abruptly. As liquidity evaporated, haircuts increased, lenders withdrew, and institutions that depended on continuous refinancing faced forced asset sales, further depressing prices and amplifying losses. Merling uses this lens to make sense of why the Fed deployed multiple emergency facilities and expanded the range of assets and counterparties it would support. The emphasis is on the functional problem the Fed confronted dealers could not intermediate. Key markets became one-sided, and prices stopped providing reliable signals. This is where the dealer of last resort idea becomes most concrete, because stabilizing the system required restarting market making and restoring funding liquidity, not simply lowering a policy rate. Merling does not present the crisis as a single cause event, but as a systemic failure of a market-based credit structure that had come to rely on continuous liquidity. For readers, this reframing helps connect institutional details to the broad arc of the crisis response. Lastly, implications for regulation and central bank doctrine. Merling argues that if central banks are forced to act as dealers of last resort in crisis, then both regulatory design and central bank doctrine must adjust to that reality. A system built on market-based intermediation can create liquidity promises that are credible in good times, but fragile in stress, especially when leverage and maturity mismatch concentrate on dealer balance sheets. If the public backstop ultimately appears at the market level, then oversight cannot focus only on depository banks. It must also consider the institutions and practices that generate runnable short-term liabilities and depend on collateralized funding. The book also revisits the spirit of Begehot lend freely against good collateral at a penalty rate. While recognizing that modern collateral and modern markets complicate what good means and where the penalty should apply, Merling's money view pushes readers to think in terms of system architecture, including which markets are core to liquidity provision and how central bank actions shape incentives. The result is not a simple endorsement of intervention, but a call for clearer principles that connect crisis tools, market structure, and the boundaries of public support. The practical implication is that financial stability policy and monetary policy cannot be cleanly separated when the transmission mechanism runs through fragile market plumbing. In conclusion, this book fits readers who want a structurally grounded explanation of what central banks do in modern crises, especially people in finance, economics, policy, or market regulation who are comfortable with institutional detail. It is also valuable for informed general readers who found standard narratives of the 2008 crisis unsatisfying because they focused on broad macro indicators while neglecting the broader machinery of money markets and collateral. The intellectual benefit is a framework that links balance sheets, market making, and liquidity to central bank action, making emergency programs and balance sheet expansion more comprehensible as responses to specific breakdowns in market functioning. Practically, the book encourages readers to watch the health of funding markets, repo conditions, and dealer intermediation when assessing systemic risk. Rather than relying only on bank capital ratios or policy rates, compared with many crisis books that emphasize personalities, politics, or housing finance alone, Merling stands out by treating the crisis as a problem of market liquidity and monetary structure, and by updating Begehot's logic for a system dominated by securities markets. Its concise style leaves some topics less explored than longer histories, but it delivers a distinctive, coherent lens that helps interpret both past interventions and the continuing evolution of central banking. If you would like to support Perry Merling, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.